Hi, welcome back to part two of the David Curtis interview, podcast interview, and along with Kali Wisson. Kali was with me in TAA Studios. If you're not familiar with David Curtis's work, please make sure you look it up. He's truly one of the best living artists. He lives in England, so he called in for this call all the way from England. That's why the call sounds a little bit different. His end, Kali and I were sitting right by each other. Here in the studio, but make sure you jump back to episode number one and follow up with this number two. It'll just make more sense. But I hope you will enjoy this this talk with David Curtis and Kali Wisson.
Yeah. Have you found, because I noticed that even with my own work, sort of you're painting along and you're sort of your drive, your inspiration does sort of wave up and down a little bit. Is there any sort of things that you do to keep yourself inspired and keep yourself sort of really fired up to do your best work?
It's a really, really, really good question, that. And it's kind of, basically, it's one that I want thinking about, really. Mm. I think if you can, during the course of the painting, concentrate on the bits that fired you, mm-hmm. the structure that fired you, and make that as strong an accent as possible, and allow yourself to let some abstraction dissipate into the passages that you think are probably not going to enhance it all that much, and let that become more of a shorthand,
yep.
And then that will kick the half crown bits, you know, the main structure, and kind of gain impetus from the best bits, really. You know, I think you have to sort of look at the subject and really not do it, and not do it for the sake. Don't paint for the sake of painting. If you can be disciplined enough to extract from the 360 degrees landscape, after a while, I mean, you and I and many others should have a trained eye not to take the lesser subject. You should be able to take that, what I usually call the 120 format, you know, the photographs, the square photographs.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because within that square is the best of it.
Yeah.
Now, you know you're going to expand it to something a little wider, but it's all in the positioning. And I think, you know, if you've got a germ of a subject, move 3 or 4 feet either way, or up and down, elevate slightly, and more often than not, your first inkling was not quite right. Shift around a bit and you get the best of the best. It's very subtle,
yeah.
But it can work to good effect. But if it's a deadbeat subject, I'd just walk past it. I'd walk away. You know, really, really search out. Really search out for the best. I mean, you know, very, very skillful painters. I mean, they say we'll make something from nothing, and they can do. You know, people can do. I think don't take. That's another thing. Don't take in too much. Don't be greedy. You know, don't take a big wide expanse because you get bogged down in detail, and you won't be able to control it. And with the light changing, I always think that 2 hours. In a piece of work on the spot is enough, because if you were fired by a light effect, that is going to change, and it might get better, but it probably won't. It'll probably get worse. And it's obviously great if you can look country jour and you get that dynamism and that magic. But that will fade.
Yeah.
So speed, I think. Now this is where your skill of your paint application and colour mixing needs to be absolutely like you've done the scales on the piano. You almost don't want to be looking at the palette.
Yeah.
Your sort of articulation, visual articulation, physical articulation from your shoulder onwards down to the hand needs to be sharp and precise. But certainly mindset, I think, is such an important thing. And you know, we don't wake up every morning fired, do we?
No.
You know, we wait to be fired. But then equally, it can wane. And the other thing is, you look for a subject, no, that's not good enough, I'll move on somewhere else. That's a big danger as well, isn't it? Especially places like Venice.
You're
painting Venice. Yeah. Oh, this square will be better. Oh, that bridge will be better. And by that time, you're absolutely whacked.
Yeah.
You've carted all your stuff over all these little bridges.
Yeah.
If it's nearly good enough, it probably is.
And
that's how I feel sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Really. The trained eye can't be overstated, can it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And when you say working in the studio, or as you might remember, I had a AirPod in, and as I was painting, I was listening to a bit of music, and I find music really does. That's probably one of my great external influences on my work. I'm a huge Roy Orbison fan, and a fan of that era as well, and that style of music. And for me, I always joke that my career is a Roy Orbison inspired career. Do you like music or classical music, or what we say when you're in the studio?
I've got Spotify.
Okay.
On my earphones, and I suppose I'm hopelessly English, aren't I?
Right.
So I'm fired so much by English composers.
Oh, right. Okay.
Elgar, Vaughan Williams, Gerald Finzi,
okay.
Gilbert Howells, not massively known sometimes,
but
they're musicians of the land, of the English landscape.
Right.
And I find if I have something like that on, it just draws you straight into our wonderful harmonious landscape. And you know, I like other stuff as well. I'm a bit of a folk rock, you know, a folk rock fan, and a bit of a Led Zeppelin, you know. Coming up from the '60s, of course.
What about a bit of Tom Jones?
Elton John, you know.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but it tends to be a little bit kind of classical-ish, you know. I don't listen all the time because I quite like the sound of being outside.
Okay.
I quite like the atmosphere. Remote the music, which is the birdsong and the stuff that's going on. And if it's a shipyard, I quite like the clatter and the bang and the noise or the noise of the sea. You know, is a kind of enough of a musical accompaniment. But a mixed blessing. It's all mixed, really.
Mm.
It's like everything with me. It's a bit of everything.
Yeah,
whatever inspires. Yeah. Whatever inspires.
And with some of the great painters that England has, Seago, hopefully I've got that pronunciation right. Wesson, Arnsby Brown.
I knew all these people.
I ask Gabor if you were to be able to sort of have a dinner and in that table, because I kind of know who I would love to have there is sort of Streeton and Harold Herbert, the Australian watercolourist, say Richard Schmid.
I think I'd have a half of yours, actually.
right.
Yeah.
Is there anyone that you could sort of throw in that we may not have heard of?
At the dinner table, in that pub in Stays, you mean, when we're having our fish and chips in that pub? I think I'd like Stanhope Forbes,
okay.
Who's probably the figurehead of the Newlyn School.
Okay.
And his wife, Adela Stanhope Forbes, who was his equal.
Gotcha.
I'd like Dame Laura Knight.
Okay, yeah.
The list would go on.
Right.
I'd like Lucy Kemp Welch, who was the most wonderful horse painter.
Right.
A tiny little lady. I'd like, I've had many a dinner with Ken Howard. And I ain't going to have any more with him, so I'd like him again.
Mm,
and yeah. I've lost another one this last week, is Tom Cope.
Oh, right.
Lots of people probably don't know him, but he was one of the great figureheads of the up till just now. Wonderful, great painter, painter.
Hadn't really seen or heard much of Tom's paintings. I'd never met him, of course, but saw his work, I think, through video and the internet.
Who is this?
Oh, Tom Coates.
Who is this? Great. A real raconteur, another great raconteur, just like Dan Howard.
Right.
Great after-dinner speaker, you know.
Okay.
As you say, not quite as well-known, but very, very well-known in the UK.
Yeah, beautiful work. Quite widely travelled.
And you know, then ones you mentioned like Edward Weston, Jack Marriott, Fletcher Watson, that group of 1940s, 50s watercolourists, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we've got Trevor Chamberlain, who's still with us, of course.
Yeah.
Nearly linking to his 90s. Very revered watercolourist, both in the States and in Australia.
David, actually, I have a question. So you guys are dear friends with Trevor. How did you guys meet originally?
I met him because I was elected in one of the Royal Societies of which he was a member back in 1982, and we were at the annual general meeting, and I met him, and I knew of him, and it was like meeting God, you know, these people. And quietly spoken, he said, "Oh, we're going out with the group, you know, come along." And it's a bit like I'm going to meet King Charles, you know. And so I went out with him, and we hit it off, you know, almost immediately, way back in 1981-82, and we had loads of painting trips, France and Italy, and
did you come to the US?
All over the place. Sorry,
I think you did.
Say again.
I believe you did a trip to the US as well.
We did. We went to Mystic Seaport.
Okay. Yeah, Mystic. Sure.
With the RSNA.
Beautiful.
Which was great. That was a Royal Society Marine Artists exhibition with the American Association of Marine Painters.
Yep.
Brilliant, great exhibition there. And then he and I, we shot off down to New York, painting the city.
Oh, great!
And then we went down to Cape Cod, and then I left him and moved on my own up to Canada.
Okay.
To the Great Lakes, and met up with some people that had just emigrated there from the year before. So it was a wonderful trip, that. So, yeah, we did that. And, there were little fabulous stories from my first book with Painting with Trevor. I mean, Trevor has an absolutely photographic eye. He can. There are one or two painters, aren't there? There's a guy called Rob Poynton in the UK here, who has this eye. They don't need to see. Mm. They don't need to see anything for more than a couple of seconds.
Mm.
Now, we were painting in Connecticut, and there was a big Mac, these silver stacked trucks came up this hillside, glinting in the sunlight, and moved up the hill and out of the way. I had a quick go at trying to catch it. Went down to see Trevor, and there it was in his painting, absolutely perfect. For about 10 seconds of viewing.
Wow.
I said, "How did you get all that?" He said, "I just see it. And it's in my mind. I can see it and it stays. And I just have to transfer it with a quick drawing with the watercolor washes."
It's amazing.
And that's all I need. You know, unbelievable.
Life is that
facility. Eh? What a facility. And he's done it time and time again. I've learned a little bit of how to do it, but it is a skill.
Mm.
It's a consummate skill that needs working on. But yeah, he's a great lad. He's also a terrific character. And we always say about Trevor, he's an absolute imp. You know, he winds you up.
Oh, he winds you up.
But we have great, times. When we have group paint outs, it's magical, really. It comes back to this, the camaraderie I think this is why these schools of painting have happened, isn't it, over the last 100 years or so, because people enjoy the company.
Yeah. I think the sad part is that, there's more painters out there, but we're also divided further away from each other too, I think.
We are, aren't we? Yeah. There isn't enough interaction, really, across the pond.
Yeah, across the pond, even here in the States, it's the biggest joy is when these artists get together and they paint.
I can imagine it must be just outstanding. I mean, I'd love to meet people like Matt Smith, you know?
We'll have a talk.
Mark Boedges. God, these painters are... I mean, there's so many fabulous Australian American painters are the equals at any time, aren't they?
Yeah.
We're as good as, I'm not saying I am, but there are a cohort of painters that can match anything in the last 150 years.
Yet we still look back, right, for inspiration. So
we look back.
Yeah.
But we've got it in front of us now.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing about painting, I think, which I think is kind of lacking sometimes with the plein air thing, is it can be a bit too slick and quick. Mm-hmm. There are probably too many paintings being produced, and they lack drawing skills. And I often say this to people I've taught. You know, you've got a great thought train and everything, but I'm afraid, old chap, you can't draw. And you need to go away and have a couple of years of just drawing and getting those skills sorted. And if that drawing was more precise and more well-founded and better composed, your resultant painting would be infinitely better. And then you can go slick.
Mm.
You can do the bravura stroke. You can't do the bravura strokes without the basic drawing essentials, which is a shame, really, because people want to whack. But they want to get straight into the joy of painting, and you don't kind of work out like that. So there is a big apprenticeship in this game, and we're all still on it, I think.
Yeah.
Or we should be. I've never been satisfied.
100% agree. You can't just paint with passion. You have to have that intellect in front of that before you begin.
I think there is. I think there has to be a very deep set thought train. For it to all stack up.
Mm-hmm.
I say to people, you don't have to whack four paintings out in a day. Just stand back. Don't just go from one painting to the other. The world is awash with mediocre paintings, isn't it? You need to do the spade work, but then start to enhance the thinking a little more. But certainly the drawing is the paramount issue on that side of things.
This might be a slightly personal thing with me, David, but when you're starting a painting and you're getting through it, do you have any sort of little bit of sort of anxiety as, oh, geez, I'm not sure if this one's going to work. Is it working? Is it going to be a good one? Is it just going to be another sort of good workmanlike one? Do you get any sort of concerns in that painting day when you're doing that painting?
I think the fear is it might be a pot boiler. We call them pot boilers over here.
A pot boiler. We don't use that in the US, but
we do in Australia.
You think, well, they're probably during the course of the day, if you do two or three paintings, there will be the middling one. And I think where the energy at its height is in the morning, isn't it, when you're sharper?
Yep.
And then you might get the spade work bit through the middle. And at the end, there's always that little painting, that little 10 by 7 or that where the light is at its optimum, the sun's dropping down, the shadows are longer, and as a consequence, the design is better. The sun isn't at its zenith, where the design of the composition is less good. And I think if you've got long shadows, richer colour, that will again will enhance the feel-good factor, won't it?
Exactly.
You know, those three parameters, I think, often actually happen in my working day.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I find...
Absolutely.
Because I even find once I've finished painting on Friday, say afternoon, I come back Monday, I'm a little rusty, and sometimes I'll do a little 10x8 warm-up of a little still life or even a little Australian finch or something just small, not technically interesting and difficult, but not too taxing in time.
A cameo. Yeah.
Just as a warm-up. That's why a lot of times when I'm outside, my first painting's a little sort of too careful. I find if I paint too slow, I can tend to get bogged down, and then if I work too fast, you're a bit clumsy. Really? But by the time I get that first one out of the way, my second painting of the day is my better one. I'm seeing value. I'm just more on song. I was curious to see. And you know the work of Greg Allen, Australian watercolorist?
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Magnificent work. He was brilliant when he was young. And I said to him, how do you go, Greg? Sometimes I'm painting better at hour 6 or 7 in a good long day than I am at hour 1 or 2. And he said, no. Yeah. And he's actually complete the opposite. He'll have 3 absolutely beautiful hours where he's just so focused, so mentally strong, and then he kind of burns out really fast and may need a break to come back to do more painting, where it's kind of like we both paint the Australian light and the Australian approach, but our personal mindsets are completely different, which I thought was quite interesting that he...
It is interesting. It is interesting that I think age is some part of it. I'm 75 now. Mm-hmm. And I think my eyes are probably best first thing, you know.
Gotcha, yeah.
But then by the time I get to the end of it, like I said a little bit earlier, I'm fired if the shadows are longer and the colour is more intense.
Gotcha.
And then I think you get the resurge of energy. And it's the eyes quite light, distinct edges.
Gotcha.
You know? And they can get a bit tight. They can get a bit, in the English landscape, I suppose, midday, you know, early afternoon, the sun's too high, or there isn't any sun, and that little bit of visual tiredness can creep in, I think, maybe.
Yep.
Not as exciting. So I kind of advocate early and late, I think. But also, the other thing about flat light is you can knuckle down as you have time on your side. You're not fighting moving sun or moving shadow.
Yep.
Sometimes then you can sort of work on tonality, you know, and explore nuances in shadow areas. More defined, and I like detail and drawing and lost and found passages in darker sections. So that fires me as well. It's an on the day, I think, Colin.
Yeah.
On the